Hello, everyone, and welcome to the All Things Military and Veteran Podcast. My name is Adam Gillard. I'm your host. Today's podcast is going to be a little bit different. I met somebody through the Facebook website, and they reached out and they wanted to tell their story. So we started talking, and what a story it is to tell. So I'm going to introduce you guys to a fellow named Gabe here. Really, the conversation that we had took place out in my barn while we were whittling some wood. Just kind of a thought I had for this podcast when talking to people about, you know, serious topics is to get them to sit down and do something tactically with their hands so that they can focus on something sometimes and not let the words get tied up in them. And then you have something to take away from it, you know, even if it's just a chunk of wood with a couple extra knocks in it. But we sat down, we talked for almost an hour the first time, and I was going to cut it up and make multiple episodes out of it, but I figured just let it play as it is. So it's a little longer than normal, this podcast is, but I think it's important. Gabe tells us this podcast about Gabe's upbringing and kind of some of the things that he's experienced being raised in a Nazi household. Neo-Nazi household. You know, he's received death threats from family members because he's no longer in that lifestyle, and he got out of it when he was a kid too, and he'll go into that, but it's wild to think how many people are ready to kill their family. So sit back, listen to it. You know, just us two cutting it up and talking about things. So I'll catch you on the other side.
The element, or the primal element of cutting through wood, too.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, when you start, like, really shaving it and, like, smoothing it out, too, it's just, it's good to feel like you did something, you know, at the end of the day. That's one thing, like, I always would, you know, try to get my troops to do is, like, you got big tasks. Like, we always have the big tasks, but sometimes just clean out a drawer.
Yeah.
You know, just get a victory for that week, you know?
You know, that is a huge thing that I mean, I'm not going to lie. I've lost sight of that too quite a few times as an NCO.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd always get pulled back into reality because something went wrong and I'd have to sit back in introspection of, the fuck did I do?
Right.
how did I screw this up that bad?
Yeah.
And then you just realize that you got so lost in the big picture, you forgot that, hey, your troop's getting divorced. This one's dealing with this. This one can't find child care for the day.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So that staff meeting slide doesn't mean that much.
Staff. My experience with staff meetings never really meant anything except what the commander wanted to propagandize you with. I was safety, too. So I was.
Oh, so you sat. Yeah. Yeah, because safety is one of those ones where, like, they say they care about it, but
they don't.
When you put a price tag on it, they're like, and I'll just look this way.
Well, and then I got into corporate safety with the casino industry when I got out. And it was even worse.
Oh, really?
Where I was being almost forced to fudge numbers and fudge things because that's, you know, not going to look good. Mm-hmm. Well, what if OSHA comes by? OSHA's never going to come by. Well, they would. Like, if someone gets hurt, well, we're a casino. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Well, and that's when I dropped my papers from there. And
was like, yeah. Done. Well, because, I mean, they can get fined $1 billion and be like, well, we just made six, so... Whatever.
Exactly.
You know, they'll...
And then the way they recoup money. One of the other reasons I left the corporate world, too. We need to save money. You fire everybody that has seniority, hire them back at 20% less.
That's good loyalty there, Jesus.
There is no loyalty.
Yeah, it's...
And then we wonder why there's no loyalty.
Yeah.
It was a mess. I saw that in military... Saw it in corporate, and I was like, you know what?
Yeah, it's tough trying to make it through when you have, like, ethics and morals. You know, like...
It is difficult.
It's the same thing as, like, going to war, though. Like, we have to teach people to shut their humanity off to go do that shit. Like how are these people just shutting their humanity off and pissing on their employees? You know, like that blows my mind that people can do that and just be okay with it. And
there was, I forget where I read it, and I'm sure it's like a meme by now or something passed around on Facebook, but to be a CEO or to be a leader or even like super wealthy, you have to be sort of a sociopath.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to say to shit, even my paramedic troops, hey, you're going to go out and pick up kids' bodies today. Guess what? You still have to come in for a staff meeting tomorrow super
right.
early.
Right.
You kind of see a sociopathic side of you that you just are not okay with.
Yeah.
But the ones that can turn it off, I feel, are the true sociopaths. Because there's no empathy mm-hmm. in their decisions.
Yeah.
No empathy, no thinking of anybody. And that I feel, can translate to a lot of social issues we see today. It's just a complete lack of empathetic thinking.
Yeah, there's no genuine care. Because even like even when a lot of people support issues, well, whatever issue it is, pick right. one, they're only doing it for the publicity of it and not because they actually like truly exactly. believe in like equality and things like that. You know,
it was, the Bud Light controversy and Kid Rock. Yeah. Well, Kid Rock is out there drinking Bud Light. I don't know if you saw that. He was,
well,
so, but it shows that there's no true core value
yeah.
that actually is a core value that you would die on that hill for.
Yeah.
It's just whenever it's convenient.
No. So,
and it shows it.
And
we see it.
Like I know in Michigan, my dad's back there. My dad's like he's kind of the one that kind of gave me the foundation for being mm-hmm. a Democrat. And,
okay,
you know he's a carpenter, like a union carpenter and stuff like that. So we always talk about it. But he absolutely loves this Bud Light protest because like they're just giving it away at the bars now. So he just walks in and orders a Bud Light, gets his beer for free, and, like reaps the benefits.
And
so that's probably what Kid Rock's doing too. I don't know how much.
But he was the one that was shooting Bud Light cans.
Yeah.
So it's like, you didn't. So what was the point of all that?
Yeah.
What was the protest then? The protest.
Just to be angry. It's just to be angry. That's all it is.
And that I saw that. I was like, how do people not recognize there's no actual core value?
Yeah.
There's just a value that makes me money for the day.
Right. It's so easy to sell hate.
It is.
You know, and that's all people do now. It's frustrating.
Well, it's comfortable.
Yeah.
And I might have, I don't remember what we talked about half the time. other than once in a while. But hate is what sells.
Yeah.
Because it's comfortable. It's easy. And you can even see it in your own life. I know anybody that hears me say, you're going to be sold on anger, regardless of who you are. Just ask yourself how many times on Facebook over the last 15 years you left 1,000 angry or passionate comments about a puppy or anything happening. You've left one or two comments.
Yeah.
Maybe someone's different. I don't know. Maybe they did leave 1,000 passionate comments. But the ones you did leave 1,000 passionate comments about that you were at war over it with someone, what was the main driving emotion? Yeah, it was anger.
It's anger, yeah.
And I still catch myself doing that.
Yeah.
Because that's what the dopamine receptors hit on. And that's what we've seen with the rise of social media is that heroin-like addiction to that constant dopamine hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now, and as we saw that expanding over the last 20 years, we saw that it was the hatred and the bigotry and the anger that made the most dopamine hits.
Yep.
And that's why most social medias, if they're not already a toxic cesspool, as soon as they open, within a month, they will be.
Yeah. Yeah.
It
yeah.
just...
Well, the ambiguity and the... anonymity,
yes.
You know, just breeds that. Like
it does.
And it's funny because, like, I listen to a lot of country music, and there's a song out there where it talks about, like, you know, we can be who we are in here. It's like,
oh, that, yeah, yeah,
what,
yeah.
What the fuck does that mean? You know, like, why can't you be who you are everywhere? Like, it just seemed like a bit of, well, you know, one of those dog whistles. You know,
well, it is.
Yeah,
it is absolutely. It is, and regardless. Yeah, it's a dog whistle, and we all know what it means. We all can read between the lines.
But I never stopped to think about it. I've heard it 100 times.
That's true.
You know
that's
what
true,
I mean?
Yeah.
And it just never, I never like sat there and listened to it and thought like, well, what the hell does that mean? You know, I just took it for a good tune and moved on.
And And that's the subtlety of hate, mm-hmm. is that it's not always murder, mayhem, and violence. Sometimes it's a, it's just the little things that are said, just the little ideology point
yeah.
that permeates that no one pays attention to, but it's always building that little seed of hatred in there. And it, it even if you're not consciously thinking about it, subconsciously, your brain is picking it up.
Mm-hmm.
And it is making those connections.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we see that now as dog whistles are absolutely blatant now.
Right.
Because you don't have to pretend.
No.
You don't. The connections are already there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we've seen it slowly over the last two decades building of just hate.
Yeah. So with your upbringing,
mm-hmm.
So, you know, when people listen to this, I'll have okay. a little introduction.
Okay.
But, tell me about, what was it, your neighbor, family friend, tell me about, you know, your relationship with,
okay.
this gentleman here.
Sure. So I did, and just to kind of give a brief background,
yeah.
I grew up in a neo-Nazi household with, neo-Nazi parents, even though they weren't openly, I'm a Nazi. It was that, it was in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So I born in 85, essentially grew up in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, it wasn't white supremacy and neo-Nazism and Nazism now. It's not even neo. It is Nazi. At that time, it was more of a subculture.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was the skinheads.
Right.
Now, I know we still have skinheads, but at the time that was like the term for it.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
it's just Republican. No, and it's absolute, like that is.
There's a funny statement about not every Republican is racist, but every racist is Republican.
When your party or your ideology attracts hatred, well, attracts Nazis.
Yeah.
And you're the only, like, the only political party that those Nazis flock to. I don't care if you're a good Christian person. Your ideology is now the Nazi ideology. How do you sit there and support that without openly denouncing it, plus the political party that openly supports and embraces it?
That's what gets me is, like you said, like a lot of good Christians out there don't actively speak out against it. Or you know, I mean, there's politicians all the time trying to dance around the subject of...
Because we know the reason, the same reason they do. There's not a hidden message there. They refuse to openly and unapologetically be against something or for something because they know they are or aren't that.
Yeah.
If I'm anti-fascist, I'm going to tell you, I'm anti-fascist. Not... Well, maybe some are good, or maybe some people that believe in murdering everybody not like them are good Christians, so they'll go to heaven, so they're good people, but I can't, you know, no. If there's a but, if there's not a full stop, you are part of the problem and part of that ideology. Because there's never a yes or no, or A or B in life. There's yeah. always a gradient of people. There's always yeah. a gradient of beliefs and ideologies. You have your far right, not far right, but extreme Orthodox Christianity, and you have your looser, more secular Christian sects.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Same with every religion, Muslim, Judaism, Catholicism. Orthodox Catholicism is way different than what we'll see here in the West.
Right.
So there's always a gradient, and there's a gradient of hatred. There's the openly unashamed and unapologetic Nazis, and there's the ones that are just supportive of it, but they're not for it, but you're still supporting it.
Yeah.
It's still part of the same issue. You're just part of the gradient. Where do you fit on it?
Right.
I want to be, say that in something that is, I don't fall, but that I'm not a part of or I don't agree with, I am not on that gradient. You will see me on the far left saying no.
Yeah.
And if you don't, and there's not a full stop, my opinion and my feeling is, and through my life and experiences, if you're not unapologetic about something, you're on the fence, which means you're probably leaning towards it in some way.
Yeah.
If not openly, at least in support.
And, I mean, I'm sure you've seen a lot of people like that who put on a facade for the community.
Yes. Okay. So that I apologize. I get sidetracked. Really bad. And I'm not... I'll tell a story because I'm proud of it.
Go ahead, tell it.
Don't get me on LSD. I will go off for it. I sat for 4 hours talking to my sister about this breakthrough I had, and she was like the next day she was like, yeah, I fucking know, Gabe. I heard it for 4 hours.
Yeah, we talked.
What? I got off on a tangent for 4 hours. Like, yeah. It's a good time. I love my entheogenes. Good God. Anyways, moving on. So I brought the skinheads because they were very open. They were very, at the time, if you, I don't know if you were part or saw them.
So skinheads, when they first started, they weren't Nazis.
They were not. No, no. And well, I apologize
when the skinhead culture started, like in Britain,
yes.
You know, they were punk, acceptive of everybody.
Correct, correct. And that, you know. I apologize for conflating the two. I don't mean any disrespect.
Yeah.
I do mean the skinheads I... Grew up with
you're talking about the neo-Nazi.
The neo-Nazi skinheads, yes. Okay. They weren't neo-Nazi. They weren't Nazi. They weren't fascist. They were skinheads. You knew what that meant.
Right.
They were open about it.
Yeah.
And then as the 90s ended and the 2000s came around, we started seeing them realize, yeah, we have to start hiding our message.
Mm-hmm.
So then they become just everyday people. Your neighbor, your family member, your dad. And just hiding in those goal ideals that were in them.
Yeah,
which I'll get into the whole ideals are there.
Do you think it was that blatant or that deliberate where they got together and I mean
yes,
we've seen it before with the Ku Klux Klan. You know, like they know they need to hide.
Absolutely, and I will explain why because I haven't met a lot of people that truly understand. What I'm about to say.
Okay.
Maybe because I grew up in it and it was where I was at and that was the specific messaging, but it'll make a little more sense. So I grew up in, my parents were the neo-Nazi one, the neo-Nazi type. They hid their Nazism. My dad, I remember when I was a kid, my dad had a Nazi memorabilia that were family heirlooms, a couple of Death's Head SS rings, a bunch of other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, and he also had a bunch of article clippings from the Nazi trials. The ones praising
the other side.
And I always, even as a kid, I was wondering, like, what is this? And then it started making sense as I got a little bit older.
Yeah.
But they were absolutely Nazi supporters and Nazi lovers. It was about, I think I was about 10 years old. We moved to Pennsylvania, middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. My dad had a job in Cowdersport, which is a town next to Ulysses, Pennsylvania, where we had moved to. And it was maybe a year later. So I was about 11-ish when we found out that this man named August Christ lived about a mile from us, about 2 miles. It was about a mile to his turnoff and another mile up to his compound, which was a compound. It had a chain link fence, had barbed wire, swastikas flying everywhere. You go into his house and there was just guns everywhere.
Hmm.
And he had become friends with my parents. Now, at the time, I didn't understand. I was too young and it wasn't explained to me, but I didn't know what really was going on with all that.
Mm-hmm.
But he started coming over. He had kids my age, kids my younger siblings' age. And, you know, I became friends with his son. And they, you know, start coming over and start what I know now is having meetings at our house because we'd have them over for barbecues and a bunch of friends would come over that were all Nazis. And, That was my life till about 14 or 15.
When did you start realizing what was going on?
1997. It was Columbine that actually changed me. Because I think you had asked me when we had first met, why didn't I become that hateful
yeah.
psychopath that embraces the ideology of Nazism.
Yeah.
And it got me thinking because I really didn't know. I hadn't thought about it for so long. And we can mess around here.
That's why we're out here.
So it was Columbine. I was 12. I remember the day it happened.
Wasn't Columbine 99, though?
90. Wasn't it?
Because I was a senior.
My timelines are gone. So anyways, I was a little bit older. But it was Columbine, because I remember that, and I remember a soul-shattering change in me. It was a story I read about it, because we didn't have internet, so it was newspaper. Mm-hmm. And it was about the shooters that had gone in. There was two girls in the cafeteria crying, watching their friends getting slaughtered. They were crying, and one of the kids just laughs, shoots the friend in the face, and then walks away, saying, maybe I'll get you next time. And that was such... like my innocence about the world was shattered to such an extent that I guess immediately became left wing, because I felt that pain she went through, and I felt the empathy of that situation from her perspective, and it destroyed my whole worldview.
Did you see any resemblance to people that you know in those shooters?
Yes. So not only did I see a resemblance, but these were the kids my age, you know, within a year or two up and down. They would praise the shooters. They idolized them. They began dressing like them. They wanted to be them. They had shrines to them. And it made me violently disgusted, because I had felt what that child felt, the girl my age felt in that moment. And it crushed me that this was even a reality, that there wasn't... why did that happen? Why?
Right.
And at that, even at that age, I was like, this is incredibly wrong. And it just... it changed my consciousness to a point I immediately saw all the hatred that was being taught to us. And again, it was subtle. It was never, hey, you're going to go out there and kill Jews and black people.
Yeah.
Yes, you heard that from your parents. You heard that hatred and anti-Semitism and bigotry. But it was never taught to you, because they didn't want you going out there and saying, my parents told me this.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because this was also the time period that my parents' generation realized we can't be open Nazis. The world doesn't like us like that. We're still going to be hateful. We're not going to change.
See, that's what blows my mind. It's like, you get to that realization and you don't think like, well, maybe I just shouldn't be a dick.
it's the Simpsons meme where it's like, I bring up meme. My sister was into memeing. I'm too old. I get it. But she's into it. But it's like the Simpsons meme where it's like, is it me the problem, or is it the kids? No, it's definitely the kids.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you are the problem.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't understand that either. After you come to that realization, how do you willfully deny it?
Right.
Yeah. How?
Yeah. Like, how do you want to hate? Like, it's a choice. Like,
it is. And I do remember that hatred as a child towards everything and anything. Like, it was just a constant hatred towards anything. And again, I wasn't bigoted per se. I wasn't anti-Semitic, like openly, let's kill them.
Yeah.
Because that wasn't what I was being trained to do at that time. It was a whole coordinated effort. But I do remember that absolute just hatred of anything. Any criticism, it was immediate hatred against that person.
Yeah.
Not, oh, little introspection. No, it's, I hate you.
Yeah.
And we see that today, too.
Oh, yeah.
By the way.
Oh, yeah.
That hasn't gone away. That's right out there for everyone to see. But I do remember that. And I remember after that, after Columbine, seeing these people praising it was when I became anti-fascist to a point I was turning that hatred and violence that was in me against them. Not the right thing to do, not the right way. And I understand that. But I was 14. Also young.
Yeah, you're 14.
I was very young. So, let's not forget that.
Yeah.
But that's when it happened. Uh-huh. And so I did see a resemblance in those shooters in the people around me. That's because the shooters were the people around me.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter if you're a neo-Nazi in Colorado or Mississippi or Michigan or Pennsylvania. You're this, that is you.
The message is the same.
The message is the same. And again, it was never overt because our parents, again, decided, you know, understood as a movement, a Nazi movement, to hide that, but still teach the basics, still build that foundation of hatred.
Yeah.
And you'd ask me, did they know, or was it a conscious effort to hide it? Yes. And I do remember those meetings, them talking about, we can't be open about this. This isn't what we need to be doing. We need to pretend and hide with the enemy. Obviously, slurs, but
yeah.
We need to hide around them so that way we can be in a position, when the time's right, to hit. And those are the conversations. I don't have proof of it, but those were the conversations. I remember that. And then it also came down to the next generation, because our parents knew they weren't going to have a revolution. They were all for civil war. They were all for going out and murdering everybody right then. But they knew that wasn't going to happen. We didn't have the internet at the time. We barely had the internet at the time.
Yeah.
There was no open or secure way of communicating between states. The 16 million people we see today, they were fragmented. They were dispersed. There was no real communication. Now you just get on Facebook and start a secret message.
Yeah.
So it's easier. And we've seen that rise over the last 20 years. So my parents' generation decided, you know, that as a group, again, that I was aware of in Pennsylvania, with August Price, who was the, at the time, he was, I think, a past Grand Wizard of the area. He had moved to his compound because it was secure, it was safe, it was his prepper dream or whatever.
Yeah.
Because he had some legal issues somewhere else. But he was the main focus still in that area. And the whole East Coast knew August Christ.
Right.
And they would come and they would, every year they would have Nazi gatherings up there, Nazi parties and flag burnings. And flag burnings, cross burnings up in their compound. And it was always in the news in Ulysses. Mm-hmm. Always published. We always knew when there was going to be a Nazi gathering.
Was it known for... to stay away, or like, were they, was the news saying it to stay away, or were they inviting people in?
It was kind of
Or is it one of those quiet things?
Yes, it was those quiet dog whistle types of letting people know, because most of the town was in on it.
Right.
Which we then saw later on when Ulysses, the whole town became blatantly a Nazi stronghold with flags flying everywhere for years.
Really?
It just openly became a Nazi hangout.
Were you telling me that there was a documentary on it or a big...
So Vice News did an article, I think, or they did a video essay on it where they actually sent someone down there, well, up there from here, but sent someone up there to talk about it. It was a Hate Thy Neighbor episode years and years and years ago. But I know if you look on YouTube, I've seen it a few times. It's Vice, Hate Thy Neighbor, Ulysses. You will see the town I grew up in. You will see the people I used to know. Everyone on there, I know.
Yeah.
Like, I know them.
That's wild.
I've received death threats from most of them. And you will see what it became just a few years after I left. Swastikas flying everywhere in town. Even today, there is one of them still left in the middle of town that has a Nazi flag flying.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't understand how he's still there, except that the town is quietly supporting him.
Right.
Because the town's still there.
Yeah.
The people I know are still there. You're okay with it? That's not freedom of speech anymore.
No.
That's straight up Nazi flags.
Yeah. You're calling for people to die. You know, like that's...
Well, yes. Yes. Yeah, so there is that. I highly recommend checking that out. It's very informative and shows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more insidious than that too, because it was never open until recently. But when my parents' generation had decided that it was time to kind of go underground and start mixing in with the enemy to be ready to strike, they knew it wasn't them that was going to do it. Mm. They raised my generation to be the one that brought in the Fourth Reich. Straight up, not a joke. My generation is the Fourth Reich generation. Except now, what my parents didn't anticipate, so we'd have technology, weapons, communication, an organization that actually makes it a fucking Nazi movement.
Yeah. And how many people are with it right now? Like
about 15 million.
About 15 million?
And I only take that as 15 million like Trump supporters, like the hardcore ones. Hmm. Yes, not all of them are straight up Nazis. I get that.
Yeah.
However, that's still a worrying number. And if even half of them are ready for that Fourth Reich, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because you and I have served in OIF, OEF, back in the day. What are our current... What's the modern Nazi movement trained to do in war? Everything we were trained to fight against. And that fucking scare you.
Yeah.
That we'll start seeing suicide bombings. Suicide gunnings, racially motivated shootings or bombings.
Yeah.
Just now with trained operatives.
Right. Well, yeah. And
we see that now. The bombs. Posting bomb-making materials tutorials on YouTube by right-wing nut jobs living out in the Midwest, making and posting those to... protect their nation. Make America great again. Which is the dog whistle that was used. Yeah. Make America great again was a term for the Fourth Reich back in the 90s when going to those meetings.
Oh, really? So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That wasn't new. That wasn't something Trump came up with.
Huh.
That was something we heard many times as the generation of the Fourth Reich.
I've never heard that before.
It's, I know, and it's crazy, because the Nazis were never, even back in Germany, they were never anti-Germany. They were pro-Germany.
Right.
They would have been make Germany great again, which I think is actually what they were saying. Hmm. So, because they had gone through World War One.
Yeah.
They were pissed off. They were hurt. They were, you know, it was a whole thing. And it was the same exact 30-year period of buildup that we see today, and it makes absolute sense as I look back that there were parents in Germany right after World War One raising their next generation to follow Hitler. We had Hitler youths for 20 years before the fascist takeover, because they were raised as the Third Reich generation.
Right, just, well...
Just not the Third Reich at that point. Like it was,
yeah, and they can't raise him as Hitler youth because he didn't come to power until 33, so...
Correct. But he still had his social programs because he wasn't in power in 33. He was in power in 33.
That's but when he got like the
government.
Yeah, that's when he got like the Chancellorhood and shit.
Right,
like
but he was doing things to get his name out long before then. The National Socialist Party, he was in that long before the 30s. And he was building his name, building his social programs to bring in youth to have an army.
Yeah.
His brown shirts were the Hitler youth he had raised as his personal army over the last 15 years.
Yeah.
And I'm not
saying like... It's a great way to build loyalty, you know?
Well, it is.
Show them a better life. Yeah.
And I just see a lot of parallels with that.
Yeah.
With how I was raised and how I know the movement was then. And I never learned the history at that time, like the deep history of the Germany takeover. But as I got older and started like looking into it, I was like, wow, this is exactly the same thing.
Hmm. So what was August Oh, yeah. And what was his, like, main point? Like, what did he want to accomplish?
His main point, so he, like I said, was a past Grand Wizard of the KKK, and a couple other groups as well. But his main goal at that point was to raise his army at his compound and to build that as the place that everyone would go when the time came.
Right, okay.
So that's why he had it fortified. That's why he had it. He had weapons all over the place. He had people watching all the time. It was an actual Nazi compound.
Yeah.
But that was his goal. And to raise his kids and the people around him to be that next generation of neo-Nazis or neo-fascists.
What was his main teaching, though? Like, how do you justify...
Oh, okay, neo-Nazis. Okay. So, yeah, I thought about that, too. again, it was never, like, blatantly Heil Hitler or anything like that. Yeah. It was never like that, even with the swastikas flying and all that. It was a steady diet of right-wing conservative conspiracies against the government. And against the people in charge, namely Jews and black people. Because at the time, Mexicans and Hispanics and your Latino culture hadn't really gotten that far into the U.S. as much as what they were concerned with the blacks and Jews. So I remember having to sit through watching multiple renditions of conservative movies of Ruby Ridge. Have you ever?
I'm familiar with that one, yeah. Okay.
Waco and all some and we're back on. Yes, it was the constant stream of right wing conspiracies, but always in a tone. Because I've gone back as an adult and relearned about those issues, like Waco and Ruby Ridge, and they were like the FBI in some of those cases had a really good reason to be there.
Yeah,
just saying, those were real reasons.
Yeah,
and the fact people died was not the Waco man. We'll get into politics of that. Anyways, it was always in a spin of, look what the government did.
Right.
Look what these black people in government did.
Yeah.
Look what the Jews in government did. They're killing our Americans. The same conservative things, talk points you hear now.
Yeah.
It was the same then. It's never changed. It's always been, they're killing real Americans. They're killing us. And by real Americans, it's always white Christians.
Right.
No one else.
Right.
So it was always with that spin. So Ruby Ridge would never be the guy had illegal weapons, was a felon, and probably should have, you know, was the one that caused his family to get killed.
Yeah.
No, it'll never be that. So the government hated him having his guns. They're trying to take his guns away, his Second Amendment right. Look what we had to do to stop them, and it ended in our deaths. So you'd see teens worked up to a point, to a frenzy.
Yeah.
And then go out and do a racial beating. Or lynching.
Right.
Or whatever. And just what happens.
They just get them riled up and tear them loose.
Yes. And that's... Again, we see it now.
Yeah. Oh, we saw it on January 6th.
We saw it on January
6th? Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same thing, except now it's... Well, moving on with that. So yeah, that's how his main training was.
Yeah.
And it was never... You know, he would do his proselytization of Nazi ideals to people, to prospective converts.
Yeah.
And he never once was like, we're fascists, we you know, we're Nazis, blah, blah. It's always, hey, you know, I got a documentary for you to see, and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
And then he can kind of gauge how far he has to dial back the rhetoric and how much of a good person he has to appear to be at first to slowly manipulate you and get you in.
Yeah, he's always just a salesman trying to...
And that's all it is.
Yeah.
That's all it is to get people in. And even when you're trying to blend in public or in a setting where people don't want you, you have to pretend. You have to be that good Christian neighbor.
Yeah.
Even if it's someone you think is a subhuman, it's okay. My kids are going to kill you one day.
That's fucking wild.
And that's the mindset. And, or, oh, great, the bank foreclosed on me again. It's not because I can't pay bills, because there's a fucking Jew there.
Yeah.
How? You didn't pay your bills.
Yeah.
It didn't matter.
Right.
They deal with it because someone's going to go kill that guy at some point.
Hmm. That's terrifying that, like, it's been, yeah, I mean.
It's probably been taught forever.
Like,
it has. It never went away.
Yeah.
Nazi idea. And I say Nazi because that's just the easiest term. We all know what it is.
Yeah.
We know what that is. Are they blatantly Heil Hitler Nazis? Absolutely not. But the package is just has different packaging.
Yeah.
Modern Nazi movements are going to be under a different flag, under a different name, under a different religion, but it's all the same thing.
Yeah.
It's fascism. And it's just becoming violent. Which fascism always devolves into. And so seeing the rhetoric today, seeing the politicians and officials saying, yeah, January 6th, that was just a tame preview. Wait till next time. You better fucking believe them.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, yeah, what's
because up? This is what they have trained my generation to do from the day they were born.
Well, and I mean, I just read...
And how to blend in.
Yeah.
Plus, that's scary. Most of them are military.
There's a lot.
They've trained on how to blend in.
Yeah. I read Trump's, one of his fucking wacky tweets or whatever he does fucking... I don't know what platform he's on. But he mentioned that girl that got killed.
The
veteran.
Got killed during January 6th.
Yeah, sorry.
I got you, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so, but he said it was a veteran just exercising peacefully, but she was trying to, she fucking broke a window and was climbing through a barricaded thing, but in his little tweet or whatever it is, it says, a veteran, peaceful veteran expressing their rights
was killed. Because here's the thing, it's never about the truth. It's about taking a little bit of truth and spinning it.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter if it's true or not. They're going to take it and run with it. And we can see that all through history. All through history, you take a little bit of truth about a race or a culture and twist it into a negative so they're subhuman and they're now the other. And we see that with their... Even in Nazi Germany, World War II, when someone was killed, it was never anything negative about them. Even afterwards, it was always put in a positive light to highlight the good things they did, not the trash, evil person they were.
Yeah.
And so it's the same thing. His base, the current Nazi group or movement, does not care about the truth. They see a veteran that was killed doing something they support.
Yeah.
And remember, good, real Americans are white Christians, and if they served in the military, they're even more of an American.
Yeah.
So even if you're committing insurrection, even if you are part of the group that stormed the capital of a nation and took the flag that represents our nation's power, and you're taking it down, putting a Chinese-made. Not China, you know, like made in China flag for some politician that you like. Even if they do that, where it's blatant insurrection, it doesn't matter because they're good Americans fighting for America. The America they want, which is a theocratic fascist nation of only white Christians. Everyone else will be slaughtered. Or turned into slave labor.
So when, because like we got that one presidential candidate,
Ramaswamy.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's a huge Trumper. Mm-hmm. You know. Does he not?
Why is he part of a Nazi movement when he's not white Christian?
Yeah.
If you look back at World War II as well, Nazis, even the SS, like their elite like group. Mm-hmm. They weren't, but they were one of the elite groups. Even them, towards the end of their power, when they realized they were losing, they needed people. There were Indian, there were Muslim, there were Hindu Nazis that were brought in from the different nations they had taken over or that they were part of. because those groups or those people that did join the Nazi movement, not being white Christians, obviously, but were not part of it, they were just a means to an end. We're going to use them to get what we need, but you're never part of us. You will be murdered as soon as I don't need you anymore.
Just promise them some fake power. And
yeah. And Ramaswamy sees it. He's an opportunist. Mm-hmm. Is he? Yeah, he's a hateful opportunist. He's racist. He's a bigot. But that's not white Christian exclusive. Mm-hmm. He knew he could turn that into a power grab, something for him. It's okay. I'll be one of them. You never will be. You will be murdered as soon as possible.
Yeah.
You just got in and got them the power they need to take over. Again, we see it in Germany. When the takeover happened, it was not all of a sudden. It was 20 years of putting people in place in certain areas that then when Hitler took over and became chancellor and took it by force, it was legal and voted legal because he already had people in place.
Yeah.
It was a legal takeover. And it will be again.
Do you think that was his goal at the beginning too? Like in the 20s when he first got in? Like,
yes. It was.
Yeah.
Because he had been in politics. Mm-hmm. He'd been given a position and he just screwed up. He had tried insurrection once and was put in prison for it. When he wrote Mein Kampf, that was in prison for the first time he tried to take over.
Right.
And then he realized, oh, I have to do something. He wrote Mein Kampf. Shitty ass book. Fuck that.
I've never read it.
Don't. It's worthless. But that was his manifesto, essentially. Right. And that brought people into him. So when he got out of prison, he was able to start building his army quietly. He then got back into politics because he knew someone who gave him position just to be nice to him because he was unemployed. And then over the next 10, 15 years, he was building that army of people that he knew would vote for him when he went back and tried. Yeah. When he needed the people in power in the military, he knew he already had someone in place. Mm-hmm. When there was pushback, he had his brown shirts. They didn't appear when he came to power. They were there.
Yeah.
He had a full-fledged army of brown shirts, which then morphed into the SS and Gestapo later on.
Okay.
Like, it branches off of that. But the very first, the proto-iteration of the Nazi group that took over, he was working on for 20 years after his first attempt. And then the rest is history.
Right.
But you often forget, because we compress a lot of times in our brain, we compress.
Yeah.
We think, oh, World War II. Okay, Nazi takeover. We don't think about it. We don't get into the weeds of what did that look like?
Right.
It didn't just happen.
Yeah.
Nah, there were two guys talking like, this is bullshit. This is happening. What do we do? It still happened. Mm-hmm. Like, that happened before.
Yeah.
And we forget about that. And if you fail to look at history, you're going to repeat it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And we are.
Yeah, we see it all.
To a point that I can look at it and say, guys, how do you not see this?
Nazi.
Totally unplanned. But yeah, how do you not see this? How are you in such denial that this is happening?
Yeah.
Because it's blatant. And again, it's blatantly told to us. When a politician gets up there and says January 6th was a peaceful preview or calm preview, and everyone laughs it off. Mm-hmm. How? Why don't you believe them when they're telling you, we're going to murder you, Mike Pence. You are going to die.
Oh, Mike Pence believed him. Did you hear about him when he was like, I won't get into that car?
Yes, but he's now back to fawning over them.
Yeah, and if Trump wins,
he will die.
He'll vote for him, too. Like, he said he'll vote for Trump. Like,
yes.
Are you kidding me? Like,
what is your...
Yeah.
But we see that as a society, essentially.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just them saying it, huh? No, they're going to take over.
Yeah.
Or they're going to try to take over.
They had a gallows set up for him.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Fuck.
This was real.
Yeah.
And they're still saying that. They still want to kill him. And I think I told you then, or the other day, I was like, he will die by his own followers. They're going to make sure of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's... It's the Emperor has no clothes scenario. Just in a very violent, deadly way. And about Nazis.
And so what always blows my mind is that, like, I thought we were past this. You know what I mean? Like,
it never went anywhere.
Exactly. And, like you said, it's all went underground and just and that kind of festered.
Yeah. But it's been in the background. The militias that we have all around, the backwoods militias, Proud Boys, shit like that.
Yeah.
They've been building for decades. Decades.
Yeah.
And again, I have not been part of that movement for 20-something years. I wasn't in it at the time. But I do have brothers that are. And are openly, not Nazis, but openly ultra-right-wing Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Nazis. All those heirlooms I said that I knew my dad had. My dad died in 2002. And that memorabilia, the Nazi death's head rings, my brothers have them. They wear them. They wore them in high school.
Jeez.
Yeah. They're proud of it. They're proud of sending death threats that they're going to murder all Democrats. They're going to kill you because you don't believe what they believe. You're the problem in America. You're Democrat, you're a pedophile, you rape children. Because you're Democrat.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're okay. He is absolutely okay that he's going to kill family members, kill anybody. He's drooling about that moment. And so are millions of others. Your neighbor, your friends, the guy you are pumping gas next to. At any day, at any point, they'll have their blutin knocked.
What's that?
Night of blood. Like they did with their night of shattered glass. When they murdered a lot of Jews. And it was the nucleation point for their revolution. Yeah. It was Kristallnacht. A horrifying night. Deadly. And they're waiting for it again.
What do you think is going to be the trigger for that?
I don't know at this point. I thought it would be the Trump, the fourth arraignment in Georgia.
Yeah.
But then as we start getting closer, it's like, no, they're waiting on something else. What it is, I don't know. And I maybe I'm overthinking it and being too... like aggressively anti-fascist about that they will try.
Yeah.
But I know the boiling hatred and what they were raised to do, and they're not going to just give up.
Yeah, that doesn't go away.
It doesn't go away.
Yeah.
Like, just because Trump doesn't become president or he goes to jail, those Nazis don't go away. They're still there. They're still full. They still have all their guns. They still want to murder you.
Yeah.
The same thing that Trump said you can do, they're waiting for it.
Yeah.
But I don't know what that nucleation point is anymore. I don't know if they've lost their faith in Trump as much as they're ready for the movement of ultra-right wing.
Okay. Let me stop real quick.
And there you have it. That is part one of my talk with Gabe. He'll be back for, at least a couple more, because that was really just the beginning of it, right? That was... just kind of his foundation, you know, what he's learning growing up. But then, you know, he joins the Air Force and does the EMT stuff. So he's got a lot more baggage to unpack. And we're going to listen to him. And I think he's going to help some folks out, because as he's gone through his time in the Air Force and his time afterwards and trying to deal with these things, he's done some unconventional things to help his mental health. So... I wouldn't say unconventional. I think more cutting edge. But so we're going to get into that too. We're going to talk about his whole experience. So I look forward to hearing from you guys again. Until that time, here's a quick word from our sponsor. All Things Military and Veteran is proudly sponsored by Native Roots Cannabis Company, Colorado's leading locally grown and owned dispensary chain. Native Roots has been our largest donor since we were founded 4 years ago, and we thank them very much for their support. We have 20 locations in Colorado, and Native Roots is ready to educate and serve recreational and medicinal patients alike. So head out there and stop by. So thanks, everyone, for listening today. I look forward to getting more of these out these types of formats out. So stay tuned and listen for the part two with Gabe, and we'll figure it all out. All right. Thanks for listening.